Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, a 45-year-old mystery around the murder of Karen Tate has a new twist. We'll unpack that soon. Plus, Putin wins a fifth term. But what does that mean for the world? The fight to ban TikTok is heating up. And do you remember Holly Valance? Well, she's back, but singing a very different tune. We'll finish up today with the top three talking points from a huge weekend of sport. In our top story today, a new twist in the unsolved murder of Karen Tate.
Karen was last seen alive on the morning of December 29, 1976, after she was dropped at her Mount Lawley home by a friend. The next day, her body was found in dense bushland in Carrigullen.
I want to begin the show today with this fascinating 45-year-old mystery, the death of a 22-year-old mum from New South Wales whose body was found in gruesome circumstances. Ben Harvey, who's been untangling this crime, joins me now. Hey, mate, why was this such a bizarre crime at the time?
So a young mother of two, vivacious young woman, her body is found slumped over a smouldering log in the middle of nowhere southeast of Perth. Her body is very, very badly burnt to the point where they could barely work out if she was male or female. Around this smouldering stump with the burnt out body, in a semicircle, an arc, was other items that had been burnt, deliberately placed in a semicircle around her and set fire to. And they were also smouldering when forestry workers stumbled upon this scene 45 years ago.
And was the thinking in these arrangements of these objects that it was some sort of occult?
Immediately, that's what the media sprang to, because it did look like witchcraft. And it was a line of inquiry that the police were genuinely pursuing for a while until they eventually discounted it. Now, Karen Tate's family has always said no, she was never involved in the occult. She was a bit of a hippie, bit of a drifter, but had never gone down that line. The interesting part about this area of Perth around Carrigullen, it is riddled with dead bodies. At least eight bodies have been recovered within a short distance of where Karen Tate's body was found. It is where people go to bury bodies in Western Australia.
Mm. And so what's the latest twist in this story then?
The burnt out equipment that was around Karen's body was actually musical instruments and musical gig equipment. It was things like light boxes, and it was things like amplifiers and bass speakers, etc. And the police had also found amongst the smouldering remains of all that burnt out music equipment two silver medal medallions that had a keyhole cut into them. And they went to the Sunday Times newspaper. This was in 1979, and they put a front page story on the Sunday Times newspaper saying, "Have you seen these medallions? Are they yours? Do you know anything about them?" But they didn't mention in that article that it was connected to a murder. And this is where we get to Peter and Judy Bright, who in 1979 were in their late 20s. They were musos. They would just play gigs around Perth and around southwest Western Australia. And they recognised these medallions because those medallions had been stolen along with their music equipment a few months earlier. Peter and Judy rang the police and said, "They're our medallions," thinking that someone had just found their gear. The police got there awfully fast, Peter told me. Suspiciously quick for just a stolen sort of theft, kind of a robbery crime. And they took Peter out to the scene of the crime, and Peter was there and he actually saw this burnt out sort of charred dystopian sort of area. It was quite distressing for him. And that's when they said, "Actually, this medallion, your music gear, is linked to this horrific, horrific crime."
Mm, gosh. And now that they've revealed in your story in the Nightly that one of their pieces of musical equipment that was stolen wasn't actually recovered at the time, and it might still be out there.
That's right. So one of the things that Peter first recognised when he arrived at the scene, he knew that two guitar boxes that he had constructed himself out of sturdy jarrah were not there. And he said that to the cops immediately. He said, "No, all of our stuff's not here." One of the guitar boxes contained a bass that was played by his wife, Judy, and the other was an ES-335 Gibson guitar. It's a semi-acoustic, and it's got a varitone switch on it. Very, very unusual. Now, that guitar has never been recovered. It was stolen from Peter and Judy. It was just a midnight heist on a trailer full of music gear. Most of it ended up being burnt out at this murder scene, but this guitar is out there somewhere. And Peter is utterly convinced that the person who has that guitar or bought that guitar from someone else could shed further light on this crime.
Yeah, and for people wondering what that guitar looks like, famously played by Chuck Berry, featured in the movie Back to the Future, played by Michael J. Fox's character when he goes back to 1955. And those sort of guitars today, in 1970s Gibson ES-335, be worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and Peter Bright has made the point that if this musical instrument is out there, it's probably not being used in a band. It will be hanging on someone's wall. It'll be taking pride of place in someone's lounge room. It's going to be displayed rather than being used because it's going to be worth a fortune. So if you do see one of these guitars hanging on someone's wall in a house, it is worth asking the question about where it came from.
Yeah, absolutely. 45 years after this terrible, terrible crime, it could hold the key to at least shedding some light on what happened to Karen Tate. And you can see pictures of that guitar on thenightly.com.au. Thanks for joining us, Harves.
Thanks, Ben.
Whoever might want to intimidate us, whoever might want to suppress us, our will and our conscience, they have never been able to do it and never will.
In news that came as a surprise to exactly zero people, Vladimir Putin has claimed a fifth term as president. Even Xi Jinping securing a third term as Chinese president last year was more of a shock than Putin's win today. In claiming victory, the Russian strongman declared his country's democracy was more transparent than many in the West. Sure, America maybe, but Putin is pulling your leg by claiming Russia has anything close to democracy. He got nearly 90% of the vote, which is a result of having no credible opposition. The closest Putin has had to a real opponent was Alexei Navalny, who mysteriously and very conveniently for Putin died in prison last month, weeks before the election. Putin is now set to stay in power until at least 2030 and has ruled Russia since 2000, the longest serving Kremlin leader since Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin. So what will another 6 years of Putin rule look like? Well, beyond the inevitable series of shirtless selfies, experts predict we'll get an increasingly dysfunctional Russia. That's bad for Russians and bad for the rest of the world, because discord on the home front will only make Putin more desperate to hang on to power. And we've seen with his actions in Ukraine that he's not afraid of the mass slaughter of innocent people to prop up his own image as an all-conquering leader. The real tricky question is what happens if Donald Trump returns to the White House too. Then I reckon all bets are off.
Over the last few years, we have invested to keep your data safe and our platform free from outside manipulation. We have committed that we will continue to do so. This legislation, if signed into law, will lead to a ban of TikTok in the United States. Even the bill sponsors admit that that's their goal. This bill gives more power to a handful of other social media companies. It will also take billions of dollars out of the pockets of creators and small businesses. It will put more than 300,000 American jobs at risk, and it will take away your TikTok.
That's the CEO of TikTok. Continuing the story that we spoke about on the show last week, a plan in the US to ban the popular app. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly voted to force TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, which is based in Beijing, to sell. Now the Senate is being urged to pass the legislation, and the argument to do so is simple. According to US lawmakers, it's a security issue. The data of 170 million US TikTok users is not safe and theoretically could be accessed by the Chinese government at any time. This is an allegation TikTok vehemently denies. Closer to home, the federal opposition in Australia is ramping up calls for this country to follow suit with a ban of its own should the US laws pass the Senate. Now, there's a few things to unpack here. Firstly, it's not going to be easy to force a sale, even if the laws do pass. There's the small matter of the First Amendment, which would undoubtedly be tested in court. And then there is the Biden administration's own antitrust laws that could stand in the way of a potential sale to an existing big tech company. company, because who else is going to realistically buy TikTok? If Elon Musk bought Twitter for $44 billion, TikTok is likely to fetch double that at least. Now, before you start to feel sorry for ByteDance, the company has brought some of this problem on themselves. Instead of working with government behind the scenes, they tried to mobilize their user base of mostly kids, who in turn started spamming US Congress people and senators, and they roped in celebs like Emily Ratajkowski.
So in my personal life, people have made fun of me for how much I talk about TikTok and how important I think it is. They'll joke like, oh, do you work for the Chinese government? What's going on?
Unfortunately for TikTok, all this has done is convince American lawmakers of the ability of TikTok and, by extension, Beijing, to influence and essentially brainwash Americans. And on that score, maybe the lawmakers have a point.
Like, I don't understand why you had this, like, demonic little gremlin high priestess of climatism as the goddess in classrooms, Greta.
Greta Thunberg, okay.
And the kids are all coming home with depression and anxiety. Why would you go to your music lesson or bother doing your homework it's or get sad. Out of bed if you think we're all going to be dead in 5 years anyway? I mean, they told me in class. Mm. Greta told me.
That's former TV and pop star Holly Candy, who we used to know as Holly Valance, having a crack at environmental activist Greta Thunberg. You might be thinking, what did young Greta do to deserve such a spray from the singer of such mediocre hits as Kiss Kiss? Well, not much, really. You see, our Holly, who currently lives in the UK with her billionaire entrepreneur husband Nick Candy, has been on a mission to show everyone what a true conservative she is. She made the comments you just heard on a podcast published by GB News, a politically partisan news outlet in the UK that doesn't so much lean to the right as it lurches, about as far as the Titanic did after it hit the iceberg. So Holly was doing her best to preach to the choir with her appearance, even going as far as regaling the podcast host with stories of meeting Donald Trump, who she described as extremely gentlemanly. The New York judge who found rape allegations against Trump were substantially true last year might beg to differ on that one. Ultimately, though, Holly Candy is entitled to her opinion. We all are. And she's been very upfront about the fact her opinions have changed since she became super rich. Funny that.
The young man, can he make himself a hero? He has done. It's Manchester United's quarter-final. In classic Manchester United fashion, the counter-attack, and a youngster doing it as well.
And it was an epic result in the FA Cup overnight. And here to unpack that and the top three stories in the sports world over the weekend is the nightly sports editor, Ben McClellan. G'day, Ben. How are you doing?
Good, mate. Good. It's been a pretty busy weekend of sport.
Huge.
It's always good to come in on a Monday morning and have a pretty epic English sporting result there, ready to go. So, yeah, it's just an unbelievable game between two great rivals of English soccer, Manchester United and Liverpool. Obviously, Manchester United have been the dominant team for forever, but have sort of fallen off the pace. Liverpool are top of the pops at the moment. This was the quarterfinal. It was an ebb and flowing game. The teams traded the lead a couple of times. Manchester United scored right before the end of regular time to push the match into extra time. And then Manchester United star Ahmed Diallo scored right at the death in injury time of extra time. A lot of times to keep a track of to basically take the win 4-3. So, yeah, it was a fantastic game. Obviously, great for the sport. Great for Manchester United. They've been under the pump. They're well off the pace, like I just said. So yeah, it's just a terrific result. And as we know, the round ball game is followed very passionately here in Australia and particularly the English Premier League.
Yeah, absolute elation for Man U fans around Australia. Not so much for Liverpool fans.
No.
Their quest for a quadruple of trophies in Jurgen Klopp's final season.
Good pronunciation.
Is gonna end in disappointment, certainly when it comes to the FA Cup. Absolute classic, though. Mm. FA Cup quarterfinal, just mm-hmm. amazing. Meanwhile, in the AFL, there was also some kicking.
Yes.
But, Not the sort you can really be proud
of. It's a funny old sport, AFL. They encourage kicking pretty much throughout the whole game. Just don't kick each other. So,
no, there's some pretty clear rules around that.
So Hawthorn and Essendon, they're both clubs that, once great, not doing so great in the 2020s. They faced off at the MCG. There was a lot of feeling in the game, is as we like to say, and there was a bit of a scuffle between the teams after a goal, and the Hawthorn skipper, either inadvertently or deliberately, if you look at the footage, there's probably no other way of examining it, has kicked out at an Essendon player, Andrew McGrath. He's been cited for that. In true sort of footy fashion, the quote-unquote victim has come out in support of the Hawthorn captain. So McGrath came out today and said there really wasn't much in it. He didn't feel anything. He'd be willing to say that at the tribunal. So it's up to the Hawks to decide today whether they cop the penalty, which will be a fine and possibly a game ban, or whether they fight it at the tribunal. There's been a number of other incidents, including a headbutt during the Gold Coast game, as well as half a dozen other sort of small fracas, which resulted in fines.
And we can't end on that note.
No.
We're going to end on a much higher note, literal
yes.
higher note. Let's take a listen to the NRL action.
Pappenhausen, Remus Smith, he goes to maybe a coach! Can you believe it?
That's the best try I've ever seen.
The best try I've ever seen.
It's unlike a former NRL player to trade in hyperbole in the commentary box, but in this case it yes. might be justified. Xavier yes. Coates from the Melbourne Storm, a game-winning try
yes.
right in the dying seconds of the match. How would you describe Coates' performance
it's
here?
It's one of the most incredible pieces of athleticism I've seen on a rugby league field, and I think what's most interesting out of this story is, you know, Coates essentially leapt over a defender in anticipation that he was going to be pushed over the sideline, managed to plant the ball down with his right hand while he was pretty much upside down, whilst most importantly keeping his left hand above the ground, because if he left-handed hit the ground, he would have been out and wouldn't have counted. And we're talking millimetres of difference here. And you know, won the game for Melbourne. And then after the game, he revealed that it's something he trains for. So yeah. So they do a training manoeuvre where he basically runs. They sort of push him, you know, he sort of push him off with the big tackling pads, and he tries to plant the ball down in a very small spot. And it's becoming one of the trademark skills of a good winger, because the game is so intense, everyone's so fast, everyone's so big. You know, the game is in millimetres, so these wingers need to perfect this skill of being able to get the ball over the line without any other part of their body being anywhere near the ground.
Yeah.
So it's just absolutely incredible. I mean, Melbourne, what can you say? I mean, they've had so many fantastic moments in their career of the last decade or so, and this is just another one. So, yeah, heartbreaking for the Warriors, who are a very strong club. But yeah, it was a terrific round of NRL. I'll just quickly say, we spoke about Benji Marshall on Friday, who was under fire. His team lost, so he's still yet to get that first win. But yeah, the West Tigers fans are looking like they're going to be in for a long season ahead.
Yeah, long year for Benji Marshall. Although, you know, he might not be at the club or.
Yeah, well,
24, he's not there 24/7, yeah,
no,
we learned last week.
Who knows?
So,
who knows?
And not as long as it might be for fans. And that, folks, is today's show. Thanks to Ben McClellan, sports editor of The Nightly, for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And join me again tomorrow on The Nightly Five.
The Nightly Five podcast is brought to you by Seven West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au, helping you get in front of tomorrow.